the material energy. This is how the material energy is set up. Samahamsa Bhuteshu, you commit a crime, you get punished. You do some punya, you get reward. And Krishna does sanctions that as the anumanta or committer. But, practically speaking, he's just sanctioning that. He's not directly dealing with it. So practically, he's actually neutral. Actually, he's not there in that sense. He's just letting the material energy deal. But for his devotees, he acts completely differently. And that's what we'll hear about very soon. So those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. To show them special mercy, I dwell in their hearts, destroying the shining lamp of knowledge, the darkness born of ignorance, just as a bee enters a lotus, or as it would kind of say. I wanted to read. Listen, this is very, very interesting. Prabhupada's purpose. Man can go on speculating for several millions of years, and if he is not devoted, if he is not a lover of the Supreme Truth, and there's so much of a difference between when we say he's not a lover of the Supreme Truth. The word lover in English has so many connotations. Not, it means, you know, you love somebody. But priti purvakam, that is something different. So if he is not a lover of the Supreme Truth, if he is not worshipping him with great priti, he will never understand Krishna or the Supreme Truth. Only by devotional service is the Supreme Truth Krishna pleased, and by his inconceivable energy, he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotees. So somehow, how to attract Krishna's mercy to come to us? How to act in such a way, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, how to act in such a way that Krishna will see us and give us his mercy. That is the meditation of the devotee. How to act in that way that Krishna will bestow his mercy. We should all think about that question. What is in within my power now to act that Krishna will bestow his mercy and be kind to me? So the pure devotee always has Krishna within his heart. And with the presence of Krishna, who is just like the sun, the darkness of ignorance is at once dissipated. This is the special mercy rendered to the pure devotee by Krishna. due to the contamination of material association, through many, many millions of births, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. But when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears. But what Prabhupada doesn't mention there is that we have to avoid Namaparad, especially Vaishnavaparad and Guru Abhagya and Namno Bharadyasthi Papabhuti and committing sins on the strength of chanting, especially Vaishnavaparad, but all of those. And if we avoid Saraninda, Vaishnavaparad, then the chanting will have such effect so quickly, but our trouble is we don't avoid it. So the dust quickly cleared by chanting Hare Krishna, and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. The ultimate goal, Vishnu, can be attained only by this chant and by devotional service and not by mental speculation or argument. The pure devotee does not have to worry about the material necessities of life. He need not be anxious, because when he removes the darkness from his heart, everything is provided automatically by the Supreme Lord, who is pleased by the loving devotional service of the devotee. This is the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. By studying Bhagavad Gita, one can become a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord and engage himself in pure devotional service. As the Lord takes charge, one becomes completely free from all kinds of materialistic endeavors. So this point is very attractive. How the pure devotee does not have to worry about the material necessities of life. He need not be anxious, because when he removes the darkness from his heart, everything is provided automatically by the Supreme Lord. So the devotee is completely dependent on Krishna. He is not doubting. He has full faith. He knows Krishna will give him more protection. And he doesn't want to take shelter. Tesham bhavata nidanam pashanapi na pashyati. He doesn't want to take shelter of the fallible soldiers of the material world. Other things that we tend to depend upon in the material world. He doesn't want to take shelter of those things because that diminishes his taking shelter of Krishna. So he may be acting in the material world, but his shelter is completely Krishna and Krishna's lotus feet and Krishna's devotees. With both things, this can't be artificially done, but yet this is Krishna consciousness. And then how does Krishna reciprocate? He provides everything for that devotee. More and more and more. But the real, not more and more and more material things, although he provides for the maintenance of the devotees, certainly. After all, he's providing for the maintenance of the non-devotees. This is his real reciprocation. Yadami Bhuriyolam Dham. And also Tama. He removes the darkness. Any darkness, any dust, within the mirror of the heart. He personally moves above honey, vidyana of Sitaram. So, remembering that, how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees, referred to two verses, how Krishna reciprocates. I wanted to move back to hear more about this point. In the ninth chapter, starting with 9:22, and then quickly going through 23, 24, 25, and then starting 26, we'll go on in more detail again. Oh, we just could ask for questions now.
Why does verse 11
follow
verse 10
when
verse 10 is
the starting point? When Krishna's mercy descends, just like when the light comes, the darkness dissipated. It's not that darkness, actually speaking, we can't get rid of the darkness first. We can't completely do that. It takes the light to do that. The light of Krishna's mercy. So this is also described in Madhurya Kadambini, how there's still, even in Bhava Bhakti, there is, just like if I had some kerosene in this room. So even though I move out the kerosene, that scent of kerosene will still permeate the room. So in that way, even at Baba, the scent of these things, of material contamination, still remains. But more and more. By prema, everything is completely vanquished. Every trace of every single thing.
So does verse 11 still apply to Bhagavad
Gita? It seems to me, at least, this is Krishna's reciprocation of the devotees. So in other words, you don't have to worry about your heart. Krishna will remove everything by the potency of attraction to him and love.
In verse 10, Bhagavan says, by which they can come to me, and you learn the phrase that they come close to Krishna. That what you are referring to, the word Upayanti.
Come closer.
Yeah,
closer and closer forever.
So you are thinking the meaning of the word Upayanti there?
Yeah, come.
Yeah.
Come to me.
Come to me.
Me in the form of
Brahma.
Brahma.
Brahma. susceptible they? Because born from my mind, come from me, born from my mind. But Brahma is acting as Krishna's creator. He's empowered by Krishna. So, indirectly. Because after all, this has to do with the material world. And what does Krishna have to do with the material world? So, earlier on in the ninth chapter, that has been explained the attentive relationship between Krishna and the energies by which he creates the material world. He and his material energies. He is separate, aloof. But yet, you can't say that the energy doesn't have anything to do with it. It is actually his energy, and it is how he creates the material world. So it's improper to say that he is not creating the material world, and it's improper to say that he is creating the material world. Right? He is doing it through his agencies. But yet it is him who is doing it. It is Krishna's Lord Brahma, as you said, with the Guna avatar.
Instead, for the non-devotees, the material energy regards them accordingly. Mm-hmm. And for the devotees, Krishna is person. And also, because there is a difference that actually a devotee member can say him of Bhava, otherwise he's trying to become devotees. So for those who are aspiring to be devotees, Krishna is person or the material energy just begins with them.
The devotee should see the same consumption in which Shemano, Bhunjan and Gatmat, Ripada Pratam, Vibhav, Vipapurvam, Vilajana Namaste, Jivita Yom, Mukti Pate, Vilayana. That's the vision of the devotee, that Krishna has mitigated my karma. He has interfered with my karma.
So we can
even throughout the karma, even our seven.
So we can think that Krishna is...
we should take it like that. Otherwise, if we don't see that, we won't, if something happens to us, we won't see Krishna either. And then we won't be Krishna conscious. Yeah, we should definitely see that. This is actually described also, that the devotee lives in Krishna. He's living in Krishna's mercy. This is his vision. He doesn't see anything as separate from Krishna.
Even though we are not on the platform of Bhava.
Even though, but because of the mercy of our spiritual master, even though Bhava means that you have the purity and the connection to directly serve Krishna. It's immature, it's prema ancora, it's immature. But yet you have the direct connection. Now we don't have the direct connection. But by the mercy of our Guru Maharaj and the Guru Parampara, our service is accepted anyway, even though it is impure. So therefore, we could say that when we are not devotees, and what we do is not bhakti, or we can say it is because it leads to bhakti. So depending upon which point we're stressing, we'll stress one side or the other. But we should understand that we should think of ourselves, we are aspiring, we are servants of our Guru Maharaj, we are aspiring to become devotees. Is the pen raised, pointed upwards, so to see if you have a question?
Yeah. Page 509,
if you don't mind going back. Proverbs
49.
I'm going to end our time today. Doesn't mean I'll speak
twice,
it's gone tomorrow.
Is it fine excusing the minor offenses of others? Why is it?
Where is that?
At the bottom of page 509, the fifth button line.
If you're a page number, it's not necessarily the same page number.
Yes,
first
on the bottom line, one should be tolerant and excuse the minor offenses of others.
Yeah.
Because before you can expect someone to excuse the major offenses of others, you have to learn how to excuse the minor offenses of others.
Verse
stepping from
each verse
from to make 10th canto, 14th chapter, the prayers of Lord Brahma. Very important verse, Prabhupada somewhere says that that consciousness is the secret of Krishna consciousness. Because we'll always see Krishna if we master that consciousness. And we'll see our faults. And instead of thinking, he's done this to me, we'll be thinking, I wonder what I did in my previous life that has placed me in this situation where I have to suffer in this way. Because it's not automatic, and it's not happening to everyone, it's happening to you. Specifically, so that means that you've done something, or Krishna's placed you in that situation to learn. So if you're just working off some karma, and Krishna's minimized it, how fortunate you are. And if you're being placed in that situation to learn something, Krishna's placed you there to learn something, how fortunate you are. Because Krishna's doing that to you. So either way, we're fortunate. But it's hard. It's much easier to preach to people about it than when it's happening to you. That's my experience. Last question. Next question.
Do you see all changes?
No. Look it up. It's in so many places. It's probably in the Bhagavad Gita.
It is in 628.
Page 628.
So not in Buddha's.
Look it up. I think of it like that, but I've never read it anywhere. The first half of 9 is very basic knowledge of Krishna, that everything is coming from him. And then you can say that some of the others are avideya, because they're telling of the activities. And then, but then the next part is Krishna's reciprocation. Maybe. I don't think so. Prayojana is love of Krishna. Okay, tomorrow we'll do, hopefully, Krishna allows. So, my favorite things. Chapter 9, the end of chapter 9. How yoga the devotees who worship him with love and give up everything else for his service with love. Very wonderful. Chapter 9, text 22. Earlier in this chapter, Krishna has explained his inconceivable potencies and how different people, different individuals who are worshippers, worship him ultimately, although they may not actually know that they are worshipping Krishna. Then Krishna here, in text 22, a very important verse, Ananyas Chintyasu Mam Yejana Parivasate Kesham Nitya Vyuktanam Yogi Chemam Paham Yehu. So, one who has no other object, Ananya, his bhakti is Ananya. Ananya means it is fixed on him only, with no other desire. This is actually bhakti. We don't have bhakti to the demigods, we don't have bhakti to our country. There is a popular name in India, at least I know one person by the name of Deshbhakta. So he was probably born around Indian independence time or something. His parents were full of great nationalistic feelings and named him the devotee of his country, Deshbhakta. But actually, bhakti
is not meant for anyone but Krishna. And it is meant to be, for it to be pure, for Kevala Bhakti. Ananya Bhakti means that it is focused simply on Krishna. So Ananya means having no other object except Krishna. Chintyanto, mam. So without any, because you can concentrate on Krishna, but for a short time. So that's Chintyanto mam. But Ananya's Chintyanto mam means you are concentrating on Krishna continuously because your meditation has no other object, only Krishna. So this type of pure devotional service is being described. Ye janah, and those people on Paryupasa day who properly worship in this way, tesham nitya abhiyuktanam, they are fixed in devotion in this way. And then yoga chemam vaham yaham. Yoga chemam vaham yaham means that this, they are fixed in this yoga and I protect them and I carry them, practically speaking. Aham, Krishna says, I personally do this. This is Krishna, Krishna's relationship with his pure devotees. Yoga chemam vaham yaham, that he carries them. And Prabhupada translates this verse very sweetly, but those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating upon my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Prabhupada explains in his purport. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies, which make the devotee perfect in self-realization, so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes we think that it's improper for us to desire to be with Krishna, but that is not correct. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Janmani Janmanishvare Bhavachad Bhaktyari Tuki Taye, he's showing that the devotee, even birth after birth, is wishing to always remember Krishna, always serve Krishna. But that doesn't mean that the devotees like ourselves think that I don't want to be with Krishna, I want to stay in this world birth after birth for preaching or something like that. That is a misunderstanding of the philosophy. Because when we desire to stay in the world birth after birth, it is not to serve Krishna, it's because we have material attachments actually. We should desire to be with Krishna. One time in Japan, Prabhupada was saying that we should desire, in one of his lectures, he was saying we should desire to go back home after God into the Loka Vrindavan. So I said to Prabhupada in very, like a second grade child, a 6-7 year old child who thinks he's very wonderful and knows everything. So I said to Prabhupada, we just want to stay here and serve you. And Prabhupada looked and said, don't make me stay here to accept your service. It's actually natural for a devotee that he wants to be with Krishna. Because this material world is a horrible place. It is a horrible place. It is the most horrible place. It is the most frustrating place. And the more we try to arrange our life to get happiness here, the more miserable we become. And even the happiness we do get, we're fearful all the time, because at any moment it can be taken and something disturbs it. So that very happiness becomes a source of distress. It is a horrible place. In the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura would say it is not a fit place for a gentleman. So we should cultivate this desire to go back home, back to Godhead. We should, it is good. But we should not do that in a selfish way. I want to go back home, back to Gaya, because this couple of bhiksha trees, and you, if I want a motorcycle, I can get a motorcycle. If I can get whatever I want, it's good for Sodom there, not like in some places, or whatever. So that is not our, the mood for going back is I want to serve Krishna. And how can I live without Krishna's association? That is exalted Krishna consciousness. So actually the stage of Ayi Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram, praying, oh Lord, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or another I have fallen to the social of birth and death. Please therefore fix me up as an atom of your lotus feet. And which is the one that's the beginning? The end is Damani Damani Shre. What is the beginning? Nandanam Nandanam Nasundarim. But I don't want wealth. Janam Farah Sundarim. Different translations, either beautiful women or have the prestige of people worshipping me because I write such wonderful verses. Savitam va jalidhisya kamani mama jalidhisya. So the devotee, when he's actually fixed in Krishna consciousness, at the moment of death, where does he hope to take his next birth? He's just praying for service and a situation where he can remember Krishna, and then he allows Krishna to move him where he likes for his own welfare. But he does not want material things. He does not want it all. This is a very pure platform. Very pure platform. So, Krishna here explains that if we just worship him exclusively and focus our consciousness on him, how does Krishna react to that? Is the devotee going to be left alone? Because we tend to think, if I just devote all my energy to serving Krishna, who will take care of me? So here Krishna says, who will take care of us? Esam nityavayukkanam yoga shemam bahamyam. There are many stories in this regard. The famous ones, into one Vaishnava named Arjuna Charja, who lived many, many years ago. But when he saw Krishna this verse, and he was a very pure devotee, very exalted Vaishnava, and when he saw this verse, what Krishna says, Yogi Shemam Baham Yaham, and Baham means that I personally carry to that devotee, if he worships me with Ananya Bhakti. I personally carry him. Bahamya means I carry him. So this Arjuna Charja became, was such a wonderful devotee, he said, why should Krishna personally carry him? He's the Supreme Lord. Why should he personally do this? So instead of, he actually changed the Bhagavad Gita, he scratched it out, and where it said Bahamyam, he wrote Karamyam. I have it done. When someone is devoted to me in this way, I have his necessities carried for him and provide everything for him like that. After scratching it out, he left. And he was so poor. He and his wife were so poor. How many of you know this story? Raise your hand. Everyone knows it already. Don't tell it anyway. That was fun. He was so poor that they had no food in the house. He and his wife. And every day, he was so dependent on Krishna, and he was in that mood, that he would go and beg, and whatever he would beg, and succeed in begging, his wife would cook that, and they would eat that on that day. So this is really depending on Krishna. It's glorious. So after some time, while Arjuna Charja was out, his wife was in the house and the knock on the door. And then very insistent. So she goes to the door and she sees, in the way I heard Prabhupada tell the story, because she saw two boys. Actually, he said two boys. And they were carrying, there was two, he said the name of it actually, I can't remember what it was.
But there was a long stick, and I put the stick on the shoulder, and each end there was a basket. So she looked at this boy, why are you banging so on the door? Oh, here, you please take this food. Took the basket off his shoulder, the stick off his shoulder, and took the basket, said, here, immediately, please you take this, we have to go immediately. She said, my dear son, you're so beautiful, you're so wonderful with your darkest complexion and curly hair. Why are you in so much anxiety? Why do you want to leave? Come in, sit down for a few moments. It's in the midday, the sun is on. No, no, I don't want to sit down. I cannot come inside. Why? I'm afraid. Why are you afraid? Why are you giving me this food? How's it come? Your husband, he has sent me here. And I'm afraid he's going to come back and beat me again. What, my husband? Brahmin scholar, so peaceful, so pure. He's beating you? Yes, you look. So he showed him his back, and on the back there were beating marks. I must go immediately. Please take this. Everything is there. I'm going. Wife was amazed. She opened up. They didn't have any food for that day, and there was so much rice, so many vegetables, wheat flour, everything. So she started cooking, thinking, who is this boy, my husband, what has he done? So she was thinking and thinking. When she finished cooking, she offered the food, and then she began to eat, which is completely against the Vedic culture. Because in the Vedic culture, not the Western culture, the wife will always serve her husband first. And then after he has taken, she takes. So she began to eat, and suddenly Arjuna Sarva Prabhu comes, opens the door, and sees his wife eating. You're eating? How is this that you're eating? And she immediately jumped up and said, Sarva, you have become so cruel. That's how Prabhupada said, Charger, you have become so cruel. You're beating this boy. How is this? What? Yes, he has come and all this food, and he saw all the food there. He has come with all this food, and then he ran away and he showed me the beating marks on his back, and he said, you didn't force him, and he wouldn't even stay. Began to think. And then he realized what had happened. He said, what did this boy look like? Oh, he was very, very beautiful with lotus eyes and dark curling hair and darkest complexion. So beautiful. Yellow jodi like lightning. So then he understood that he had forced Krishna personally to come. And when he had scratched out Vahamyam, that I will bring it and made it Karamyam, I will have it done. Krishna showed those scratch marks as beating marks right on his own back. So how wonderful. This is the nature of bhakti. And that is why bhakti, especially on the level of Bhava bhakti, is so rare, because it places Krishna. What is the term? We explained it yesterday, which says that Bhava Bhakti is so rare that Rupa Goswami said? Who remembers? You said it yesterday. Sudurlava. It is so rare because it is awarded by Krishna. And Krishna is, he is careful who he awards this to, because he becomes under the control of that devotee. So he's careful. So this verse shows how Krishna personally takes care of his pure devotees. So one of the acharyas put in this conversation between Krishna and a devotee. They say, you carry upon your head the needs of your devotees? What kind of devotee allows you to do this? Makes you serve him? And Krishna's answer is, they have not given me this burden. I do it by my own sweet will. It is not a burden.
I can create universes. This is not a burden for me, for I have a feeling of personal desire, so therefore there is no burden. What? Where are we?
Yeah.
Vrindavan?
Yeah.
You are just in the right place. Don't worry. So this is how Krishna deals with his devotees. Next verse. But, now see, there are contrasts going on, and then it will finally lead to, from 26 onwards, Krishna will begin to explain this in detail, how he deals with his devotees. So, but those who are devotees of other gods, and who worship them with faith, actually only worship me, O son of Kunti. But they do so avidipurvaka, without proper intelligence, in the wrong way. Because it is Krishna who is empowering the demigods to satisfy the needs of the worshippers of the demigods. Krishna gives the demigods the potency to reward those who worship the demigods with their own desired results. And if Krishna did not give the demigods that power, the demigods would have no potency to do so. So those who worship the demigods, instead of worshipping Krishna, they're actually still worshipping Krishna, but they are doing it in the wrong way, avidipurvaka. Next verse. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices, bhoktaram, dagatavasam. Krishna said the same thing at the end of chapter 5. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth amongst the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors guard the ancestors. So those who worship the demigods are in the mode of goodness. Those who worship the ancestors are in the mode of passion. And those who worship the ghosts and spirits in the mode of ignorance will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me, for Vishuddhasattva, pure devotional service, they will live with me. So when one worships the demigods, one gets some result, but that result is flickering. And ultimately, those results are given only by Krishna. Ultimately. And if one makes some mistake in his sacrifice, then he doesn't get the actual result. What to speak of, he does get it, but yet it is still temporary. Because he goes to the planets, ultimately he may go to the planet of the demigods, but then, after taking birth amongst the demigods, he will come down again. This has been explained earlier. What to speak of the miserable results that come from worshipping ghosts and spirits and the forefathers, the pitris. So therefore, the conclusion is that if one wants an eternal result, where one won't have to come down again, one should leave the material world and worship Krishna. This is the result. Now what happens? Or how does Krishna expect his devotees to worship him? Because if one is worshipping the demigods, there are great, elaborate sacrifices that have to be performed. And again, if the priest pronounces the words wrong, everything is ruined, and one may get the opposite result. And it's very, very, very difficult. Very difficult. And after performing such difficult sacrifices, the result is temporary. So therefore we should worship Krishna. So how do we worship Krishna? Krishna explains this in the 26th verse, very famous verse. And this begins what I call Krishna's contract. This is Krishna's plea to the devotees or the readers of the Bhagavad Gita that they should worship him. And this is the end of the ninth chapter, which is right in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita, the most confidential understanding or the most confidential information within the Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam param toyam yome bhakti prayasati saraham bhakti paritam asnami paritakana. That if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, patram, that's singular, not patrani, one leaf, not an elaborate sacrifice costing thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of rupees or dollars or whatever. If one offers one leaf, one flower, one fruit, some water, but with bhakti, I will accept. The demigods, they are pleased by what you offer. But Krishna is pleased by the devotion in which the offering is made. Krishna has everything. Already, he is the bhokta. He is the enjoyer. He is loka maheshwara. Bhoktaram jagatavasam sava loka maheshwaram. He doesn't need anything from anyone. He doesn't need to be glorified. He's already most glorious. But it is in our benefit to glorify Krishna. It is in our benefit to give something to Krishna. And Krishna doesn't need it. But when we offer something with devotion, then Krishna asnami, I will accept it, I will take it. Krishna's appetite increases with the devotion of the devotee. There are two little stories about devotees' offering. One is in the forest. There was one Savara, devotee of Lord Ram. And when Lord Ram appeared near her house, there were some bandhi trees, bear trees as they're called locally. They're all in fruit right now. So she wanted to offer these to Lord Ram. But sometimes, if you're experienced in bear fruits, they sometimes taste sweet, sometimes they taste sour. So she would take a bite out of it to make sure it was a sweet one, and then give it to Ram. And test another one, bite, and to Ram. And Ram was accepting it. Obviously, we shouldn't imitate. Or the other story is